Please note that the ringing of cell phones, pagers, and similar devices can still happen virtually and is still prohibited. Please ensure your device is silent. Public comment will be available for each item on the agenda. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. Opportunities to speak during the public comment period are available via phone by calling 41415-655-0001, entering the access code 2669551-3879 and entering the password CCSF. That is CCSF. When connected, dial *3 to be added to the queue. Best practices are to call from a quiet location, speak clearly and slowly, and turn down any other devices. Alternatively, you may submit public comment by email to the Department's Policy and Public Affairs Assistant Coordinator at environment@sfgov.org. Comments submitted via email will be posted on the department website and will be included as part of the official file. My name is Deidre Tannenberg, Policy and Public Affairs Assistant Coordinator at the San Francisco Environment Department. I'm joined by my colleagues, Dr. Shoba Iyer, Integrated Pest Management Program Manager, and Gabriel Hernandez, Integrated Pest Management Program Assistant, San Francisco Environment Department. With that, we could proceed to item 2, a presentation on current citywide integrated pest management program initiative and pesticide use trends. Speakers Shoba Iyer, Integrated Pest Management Program Manager, and Gabriel Hernandez, Integrated Pest Management Program Assistant, San Francisco Environment Department. Shoba, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you so much, Deidre. And I'll wait a moment until you get our presentation slides up. During that time, I'll say hello to everyone who's attending. Welcome to our annual public hearing regarding pest management activities on San Francisco city-owned properties for the 2023 calendar year. Next slide, please. There are currently two of us working on SF Environment's Integrated Pest Management, or IPM, team. As Deidre mentioned, my name is Shoba Iyer, and I'm the IPM Program Manager here at SFE. And in my role here, I work on both IPM as well as our Buy Green program, in which we work with city departments to choose greener, more sustainable options in different product categories. I'm very pleased to introduce my teammate, Gabriel Hernandez. Gabriel, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Thank you for that, Shoba. Hi, everyone. Gabriel Hernandez. I am an IPM program analyst on the team. I've been in this position for a little over a year and a half, but prior to that, I also spent some time at SFE on our residential toxics reduction team. And thank you, Shoba. I can pass it back to you.
Thank you, Gabriel. So again, welcome to everyone joining us today. Today's annual hearing is required by ordinance under Chapter 3 of San Francisco's Environment Code. Our hearing today provides a chance for San Francisco city departments and contractors working on city properties to communicate the details of their pest management work with the public. And this is also an opportunity for the public to communicate comments and concerns about pest management activities on San Francisco municipal properties. And I want to note that the webpage announcing this public hearing has links to the meeting documents, including the slides that are being presented now, a staff memo, and a summary of pesticide use exemptions that were submitted in 2023. So if you go to our website, sfenvironment.org, there's a link at the top that says events, and you'll see a link to this public hearing. Click on that and access PDFs of our meeting documents there. Next slide, please. This is our agenda for today's hearing. I'll first provide a brief introduction to integrated pest management and describe some highlights of what our program has been up to over the last year. And Gabriel will describe the overall pesticide use trends on city properties in the 2023 calendar year. and then we'll have time for public comment. Then in our third agenda item, we'll have a chance to hear from representatives of city departments who during the 2023 calendar year have either been using what we consider the most restricted pesticides or were granted exemptions from the usual restrictions on pesticides. Under the IPM ordinance, city departments are required to explain these actions at this public hearing. Then we'll have time for public comment on agenda item number 3, and we'll also have time for general public comment as agenda item number 4, and following that, we'll adjourn. Next slide, please. So let me provide an overview on integrated pest management, or IPM. There are a lot of ways that we can manage what we consider to be pests. Pests can be organisms that are like invasive weeds, rodents, or flies, for example. Pests are organisms that we consider to be undesirable in a certain place. And so what Deirdre is showing you here on this slide is the pyramid of our IPM decision-making process. And this is the process that we apply here in San Francisco. The pyramid shows a hierarchy of approaches for managing pests. What you see at the foundation is the design and maintenance of landscapes and buildings. And this is how we can prevent pests in the first place. When we need to implement controls, we prefer to implement physical mechanical controls that don't have disruptive effects on public health or on ecosystems. Going farther up the pyramid, there may be biological controls that we can use. And one example of this is pheromone traps for managing insects. Pheromones are chemicals that insects release to communicate with each other, and they can be used to bait sticky traps as a biological control. Using chemical pesticides is really a last resort. For situations when it is necessary to use chemical pesticides, we screen out the higher risk chemicals and restrict how they are used. Next slide, please. Our pest management practices emphasize prevention, which is at the base of the pyramid. There are a lot of buildings and landscapes where we can design the pests out, or at least make the spaces a lot more resistant to pest infestations. Next slide. I'd like to spend a little time sharing with you some of the core activities our IPM team has been up to over the course of this past year. One of those activities is our public IPM meeting series. We've been holding these meetings virtually on a mostly monthly basis. The top left photo is a visual of some participants from one of our virtual meetings. We were able to convene one hybrid meeting earlier this year. You can see a photo of that group on the top right. For these meetings, we identify featured speakers, and some of the topics those speakers have shared with us recently include habitat restoration for rare plants, rodent management, and pollinator gardens. And these meetings provide good forums for IPM professionals, both within the city of San Francisco and other parts of the Bay Area and the state, to trade tips and guidance on how to manage pest problems while limiting or avoiding the use of harmful pesticides. Next slide. We've also continued to convene annual IPM trainings for city departments. You can see photos here from our trainings over this last year for Rec and Parks, the Public Utilities Commission, and the Department of Public Works. And various topics are covered in these trainings. In this last year, really in these last few months, I heard sessions on IPM to manage ants. I heard sessions on invasive and indigenous plant identification and mechanical strategies for weed management. And additionally, I am really looking forward to doing some more field trips to see more of the spaces where the city's IPM specialists are operating so we can continue to grow our knowledge and understanding of the pest problems and IPM work going on city properties. Next slide. I'm showing you here some of the requirements under the IPM ordinance. Again, IPM is defined as the use of all available methods in an integrated fashion to control or manage pests based on the identification or biology of the pest. and it considers chemical pesticide controls as a last resort. Our ordinance requires that the IPM approach is used in all pest control activities. It also provides restrictions on chemical pesticides, and that is captured in our reduced risk pesticide list, or RRPL, which is updated annually. And if you'd like to hear more details on that, I invite you to attend the Commission on the Environment meeting on September 23rd, where the reduced risk pesticide list will be an agenda item. We do update this list annually, and we look for safer alternatives for each pest issue. The ordinance also allows for pesticide use exemptions from the reduced risk pesticide list for special circumstances, and that is where this particular hearing comes in, because any department that is granted an exemption has to explain it here. Another requirement under the ordinance is for advance posting at the areas that will be treated with herbicides. We keep records of all pesticides used on city properties, and this includes compliance from both city departments as well as any contractors on city properties. As I mentioned, there's the annual public hearing that the ordinance also requires. And I'll comment that when I reflect on what I've learned over my 2 years I've been working with SF Environment regarding IPM practices going on here on city properties, what I see in practice is that we prefer non-chemical methods of control. Some examples are using physical barriers to prevent pests in the first place, and organizing volunteer groups to hand pull weeds. And despite these kinds of efforts, there are some situations that can't be controlled by physical means. One example is controlling poison oak along park trails where it's a hazard for park users. There are some steep slopes and some spaces where it isn't possible to mechanically control invasive weeds. So some herbicides may need to be used for vegetation management in those cases. There are some areas where it can be critical to kill a plant by the roots because it's jeopardizing the foundation to a structure, pipelines, or dams. Next slide, please. We at SFE screen every pesticide that's added to the reduced risk pesticide list, and the process that we use to do this is publicly available on our website in a document titled San Francisco's Pesticide Hazard Screening Protocol. We have tier rankings, tiers 1, 2, and 3. Tier 1 pesticides are the highest hazard and usually the highest priority for replacement with a safer alternative. So these tiers help us set our focus on which products to try and replace first. Next slide, please. I'll talk now about pesticide exemptions. Exemption requests can be submitted to us by city departments or contractors asking to use a pesticide that is not on the reduced risk pesticide list. Although I have the number of exemption requests we received in 2023 shown here, I want you to know that we don't really see the number of exemptions coming in each year as a metric of success or a challenge point, because if we had a large number of exemptions coming in, then we'd think that our reduced risk pesticide list is too restrictive. And if we had a very small number of exemptions coming in, then we'd wonder if we were exercising enough caution in our reduced risk pesticide list. So for 2023, we received 4 regular exemption requests. We received 10 trial use exemptions, which are for products that are being tested out to determine their efficacy in addressing a pest issue. And we received 9 emergency exemptions. Emergency exemptions are typically for situations that are threats to public health or might otherwise lead to significant damage. The emergency exemptions submitted in 2023 were for situations when a department used a product that is not on the reduced risk pesticide list, nor was an exemption requested in advance. And in total, we received 23 exemptions in 2023. So I'll pass it over to Gabriel for the next slide to speak a bit on our pesticide use trends data.
Thank you, Shoba. So next slide, please. Cool. So we've prepared a few slides that will show some pesticide use trend data. The information is publicly available on the SF Environment website, and here is the URL on the slide here. But you can also get to this URL by Googling SF Environment IPM, and then if you click on the pesticide use trends, you'll get to the part of the webpage that looks like this little screenshot below, and essentially you'll just click on the word here, and it'll link you to this display of the pesticide use trends. And I'm mentioning this in case you want to follow along as we're going through these graphs, and you'll be able to more interactively interact with this data. Next slide, please. So the first thing you'll see in this pesticide use dashboard, this is a graph of all the pesticide use citywide from 2010 to 2023. So the horizontal axis of the graph shows the year, and the vertical axis shows the pounds of pesticide applied. So you can see the tier three, or the least hazardous pesticide use, reflected by the dotted green line. And then the tier two, or more hazardous pesticides, reflected by the dashed pink line. And then the tier one, or more hazardous or most hazardous pesticides, reflected by the solid purple line. And overall, you can see that there's been a big decrease in tier one pesticide used on city properties over the years. There's been about a 98% reduction in tier one pesticide use comparing 2010 to the current year. Another thing that you'll see with this graph is this tier threes, or this green dotted line, is above the other two by quite a large amount. So tier three pesticides are usually food grade products like essential oils or things like soaps and microbials. And often it takes a larger amount of the safer products, these tier threes, to effectively replace a tier one product. So that's kind of why we see that distinction between this tier and the other tiers. And with this, this is the end of the presentation for this agenda item. So I can turn it over to Deirdre for public comments.
Thank you. Members of the public who wish to make a public comment on this item should now press star 3 to be added to the queue. For those already on hold in the queue, please continue to wait until it is your turn to speak. And we'll pause for a minute to give participants time to join the speaker queue. Seeing no callers in the queue, public comment on this item is closed. With that, we could proceed to item 3. Presentation by representatives from city departments that requested pesticide exemptions or used pesticides on the most restricted list in calendar year 2023. Speakers, Shoba I, Integrated Pest Management Program Manager, and Gabriel Hernandez, Integrated Pest Management Program Assistant, San Francisco Environment Department. San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, San Francisco Department of Public Works, San Francisco Department of Recreation and Parks, San Francisco International Airport, Treasure Island Development Authority, and PESTEC. Explanatory documents, staff memo, and summary of pesticide use exemption granted for San Francisco City operation. Informational presentation and discussion only. Shaba, the floor is yours.
Cool. And I'll actually start off this one, Deidre, but thank you so much for that. Cool. We'll begin this agenda item. So here, what is being displayed is the Tier 1 herbicide use by the Public Utilities Commission, specifically within the city. So this is the data for the Central Distribution Division of the PUC. So on this slide, in the next few slides, we'll be showing graphs that focus on Tier 1 herbicide use, specifically as opposed to pesticide use overall. And the reason for that is there because herbicide use has been of particular interest for the public in the past years. So specific to this graph in PUC City, as you can see, there's been no Tier 1 herbicides applied in 2022 or 2023. And next slide, please. So the Public Utilities Commission in the city submitted two pesticide exemptions in 2023. You can see that information in the slide. You can also visit the webpage for this public hearing and access all the meeting materials there, which includes a PDF of the exemption submitted in 2023. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jeanette Ray with the PUC. Jeanette, whenever you're ready.
Thank you for the opportunity to participate. And I believe most of this reduction has been in the greatest energy of our goats and our group that comes from the San Francisco Conservation Corps. And these are people between the ages of 18 and 24. They've been with us for the past 3 years, making marvelous differences in my world. And also our machines, which now we're downing to battery operated machinery. And most of all, our hand use that has become the IPM star. I pay more. And we utilize a lot of labor in that department. So we are stepping up and providing for these people to do that type of labor. So this past 23, I was requested by the Power Enterprises over at the wastewater area of Phelps. And they needed to rid some weeds so that the solar panels would properly absorb the sun for its energy. There was no product at that time on our use list that permitted me to spray roofs. So I located a product called Fireworks, which says on its label specifically for roofs. And it's worked out very well. And then the other product was Habitat, which we've used in different agencies, but I picked it up specifically for a site that the Public Utilities Commission purchased, and they plan to build a new Public Utilities Commission corporation yard on. And it was inundated with pampas and tree removals at the immediate need so that we could access building structures. And that habitat worked fairly well, but very, very slow. And I have not requested the exemption, but I think I will be again and again for fireworks. but it would be nice to put it on our list since it is only a cautionary product. I guess that's it.
Great.
Oh,
Thank you.
I've done a lot of ant use, but that's not on here. And my mosquito use for chemicals is at a zero because I weed cloth over the top. And I love my blower that removes all the wetness from the pipes that you can't pump out. You just blow it out. So the larvae go to the ground and dry up. Thank you, Gabriel. Thank
Great.
You, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, Jeanette, for that. Cool. And then we can just keep this slide up, but I will turn it over to, we'll hear from Kevin Woolen with the PUC Alameda. So to speak about their use of the most restricted pesticides. So Kevin, whenever you are ready, feel free to jump in.
Okay. Gabriel, you have to, since I don't see it in front of me, what specific pesticide was that? Or herbicide?
Yeah, one second for that. But I think if you want to just start about like the general IPM practices.
Okay, I'll do that. Sure. So I manage approximately 40,000 acres of open space in the Alameda and Santa Clara County watershed for SFPUC. Primarily, we work on invasive weed species. We do that using contractors and consultants to survey and identify these invasive species. We also do it in the context of conservation or preservation of certain sites on the watershed. So protecting habitat or enhancing valuable habitat. There's a big element of conservation grazing with cattle that goes on there too, that both help us with reduction of fire fuel loads. And they're a big help with the invasive species management as well. We do a lot of manual removal or mechanical with mowers. One example of that would be, we had a large, discovered a large infestation of barbed goat grass, which cattle cannot graze and can actually penetrate into the eye or nose of wildlife and cause sometimes fatal issues with animals. So we decided to take action on that promptly after finding this area. And the best way method that we found to actually manage it is fire. In the form of prescribed burns, but those are often hard to arrange. So we wound up doing it by mowing and or weed whipping these patches that were, scattered throughout about 20 acres. So that's an example of how we don't use, pesticides or herbicides to do this type of work. However, there are often times where, either because of the terrain or the nature of the plant, it's difficult to remove it by hand. And in that case, it's something like fennel or some of these plants with deep tap roots or woody plants. In that case, we would use some herbicides. The only one that comes to mind that might be tier one would be maybe Roundup, which we still use on occasion. We've gotten away from it largely, but there are occasions we use it for control of certain plants. We've found substitutes that are some of the things that Gabriel talked about earlier, these botanical extracts and or soaps that work fine for a lot of plants, but not all. So, that would be the reason we would use something like Roundup. And that's basically describes it. I would say this though, this year, after a pretty intense effort over the last 6 or 7 years, we've noticed a substantial reduction in these invasive species, such that it's just we're going to use less just because we've made the effort to get them under control. That'll be less manual work as well as any kind of herbicide use, you know, going forward. Now we're focusing on the highest value habitats and doing management. Also, this winter, we are developing a overall vegetation management plan that takes into consideration, you know, San Francisco's ordinance, IPM ordinance, and Calypso's, you know, best practices, as well as the UC Cooperative Extension best practices on weed management, which focuses a lot on prevention. You know, that's definitely something that's a height of our mind. So we buy gravel that is weed free. When we gravel the roads, we, you know, in our lease agreements and our rangeland management plan, we're buying hay or feed sources for cattle that are weed free. We're putting in a wash station to decontaminate vehicles that come and go off of the watershed, things like that. So there's a lot of proactive prevention going on as well. I think that, you know, gives a pretty good summary of what we've got going on. It's really exciting. We've got some great people working on these things, interns, consultants, trying to develop, you know, the most sustainable way going forward. I'm really proud of the job that we've done there over the last few years, developing these processes.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for that. And yes, you did cover the tier one perfectly.
Okay, great. And I'll turn it back over to you, Gabriel.
Cool. Thank you so much. And then Deirdre, we can go to the next slide, please. Cool. So next we'll hear from the Public Utilities Commission Peninsula Watershed. So the Peninsula Watershed submitted one back. Yes, perfect. Submitted two exemptions in 2023. So I'll turn it over to Matt Swagler. So Matt, whenever you're ready.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Matt Swagler, and I work with the SF Public Utilities Commission at the Peninsula Watershed. In 2023, we applied for two exemptions. Fastland is an herbicide on our reduced risk list that contains triclopyr, which is very effective for managing woody species. The use limitation specifies targeted treatments of highly invasive species. Less than 1% of California's grasslands remain intact due to development, weed pressures, fire suppression, and in this case, succession from shrubs. This exemption request was to allow use on native vegetation, mainly coyote brush, which was overtaking summer lupin. This short-statured perennial is the primary host plant for the endangered mission blue butterfly. Many shrubs are adapted for fire and grazing. If they were cut without treatment, they would rapidly grow back. Manual removal of the roots would create major soil disturbance, which would allow weed seeds to germinate and likely directly impact the mission blues, which are sensitive at all life stages. Biologists flag the lupins in the field so that crews can work around them, taking care not to trample them. We have many acres of lupins that are being shaded out by shrubs, so effective control is critical to the ongoing survival of the butterfly. Fastland is directly applied to the cut stems with a felt-tipped marker. This method is very precise and allows the lupins to reestablish. We also requested an exemption for clethodim in the product Envoy Plus. Fountain thistle is endangered because it only grows in a particular habitat, serpentine seeps. So 1% of grasslands remain intact. A subset of that is serpentine soil, where tectonic plates meeting push up a layer that is usually below the surface. Serpentinite rock has high metal and low mineral content. Many common plants can't survive in these harsh conditions, and the native plants that evolved to do so have a very limited range. So in the small range of grasslands, a small percentage is serpentine soil, and of that, a smaller subset is within a drainage. Envoy Plus is a grass-specific herbicide. It was used in a very small scale to control tall fescue and jubata grass growing within a patch of fountain thistle. These aggressive perennial grasses are difficult to control without herbicide. Removing their dense roots would impact the fountain thistle, and the major soil disturbance would open the area up to more weeds. Managing invasive plants on the scale of 23,000 acres is very different than maintaining a garden. We have a responsibility to protect resources that can't be bought in a store. The weeds we are working on have incredible adaptations. Jubata grass seeds blooms can float for 20 miles in the wind. French broom seeds can be viable on the ground for 90 years. Cape ivy can regenerate from a tiny piece of its stem. To be effective, land managers study their targets and set realistic priorities and goals informed by science. We're committed to integrated pest management, which means understanding the pros and cons of every technique available. When a particular species or life stage can be controlled with herbicide, that's what we do. In 2023, all of our Tier 1 use product has been Roundup Custom. The use limitation on the list states, use only for situations where root translocation or residual effect on sensitive areas make other alternatives infeasible. At the peninsula, we are fortunate to have a lot of grassland resources to protect. The consensus of independent scientists internationally is that glyphosate binds to soil and breaks down rapidly. We don't have another option for a safe and effective non-selective herbicide that kills weeds down to their roots without residual soil activity. Polaris and Clearcast are non-selective and have relatively low pre-emergent qualities when used at low rates, but this isn't acceptable around rare annual plants. We have extensively tested Axe, Avenger, Suppress, Lifeline, Weed Slayer, Propane Flaming, and the Foam Stream Machine. None of these options offer systemic control. Plants with root storage quickly recover. I have also hand removed more weeds than most people I've met. If you've spent much time hand weeding, you know that it has its limitations in effectiveness and at scale. I'd like to point out we've also used goat grazing to clear vegetation on the dam faces and prescribed burns for fuel reduction and weed control in wildland urban interfaces this year. Let's see. We make management decisions carefully, apply herbicide in a very targeted way at the lowest effective rates, and pride ourselves on operations that keep our staff safe. I'd also like to point out that we care about the same things as our critics. Water quality, wild plants and animals, pollinators, the safety of the general public, and especially the applicators. Thanks for diving into the weeds with me. That's all I have for today.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that, Matt. And then we'll keep the same slide, but I will turn it over. So next we'll hear from the Public Utilities Commission, Hetch Hetchy Water and Power. So join Malera whenever you are ready. Feel free to start.
Good morning, or actually, I guess it's afternoon. I'm back east right now, so my time's all messed up. So we did not claim any exemptions in 2023. So our pesticide and herbicide use remains static the way we normally do it. Our use of Tier 1 products is mainly for our public resource PRC codes 4293 and 4292, where we clear around power poles that have non-exempt equipment. We have about 160 of these poles around I manage about 160 miles of right away from Hetch Hetchy Reservoir down to Fremont. These poles mostly reside in high fire danger areas, so it's very imperative that we control and mitigate our fire potential. We do have a program that started last year where we are working on mitigating those 4292 poles with exempt equipment. And that will allow us to not need to clear a 10x8 clearance around those woody poles. We've determined through analysis the critical infrastructures, sensitive population areas, and historical areas. And that's where we're gonna start doing those replacements. The status of that project right now is that we're procuring all the equipment to do the replacements. The other exciting thing that Hetch Hetchy is working on is a tree growth regulator project. We were able to add CanStat to our reduced pesticide list in 2024. Our scope is to reduce tree pruning along the right-of-way, our work camps, and the Modesto bike path. So currently, we're identifying subject trees via GIS, and our goal is to do our first applications in 2025. A couple other projects that we have going right now that will reduce our pesticide and herbicide use is the Monarch Butterfly CCAA. It's a candidate conservation agreement with assurances from the Fish and Game Fish and Game Service. Basically, we're going to enroll our entire right-of-way with Hetch Hetchy, and then we will need to conserve small plots within that right-of-way. In those conservation plots, we'll be delaying mowing, we'll restrict herbicide use, we'll be allowed to use intermittent grazing, but overall, this will reduce our herbicide use. We're applying for that agreement this December before the ruling for the monarch butterfly, and hopefully it won't get listed. Another interesting thing going along with that monarch butterfly is some partnerships for conservation that I've been able to do along our right-of-way. One is with the Sycamore Grove Park in Livermore. In that area, we have an electric transmission right-of-way that's 150 feet wide. They do prescribed burns within the park. So this year, we found out that they've been burning underneath our transmission lines, which is very dangerous. So we were able to contact the park, and we are going to mow our area that they're going to burn around. And then we're going to start working together to plant appropriate pollinator species, not only for the monarch, but other pollinating species. And then they're going to provide informational signage regarding the conservation efforts and the important pollinator species for the public. Another partnership I was able to work with was the USFS. So we have a lot of land within the United States Federal Service, mainly upcountry. So think Cherry Reservoir, O'Shaughnessy Reservoir, Mather, those all reside in US Forest Service lands. So they would like to partner up, and a couple of things they'd like to do to help us maintain our right of way and also help them is to utilize our traffic control along those roads when we do paving and other road maintenance, where they can use our traffic control because it's very unsafe roads up there. They'll work alongside our crew, and they'll be pulling noxious weeds and applying herbicides. We have a large problem with yellow star thistle along our roadways. So that will be one way that we can combat it with that partnership. They would also like to create walking and biking trails along our distribution lines where we already have pathways for inspections. We're going to enhance those areas with pollinator species. They'd also like to create rest stops and informational signage areas for people who get turned back from the Yosemite Park right now because of the reservation system. So they'll be able to visit the Forest Service along our right-of-ways to be able to see the good work that we're doing to conserve the land and create pollinator species. They'll also do the informational signage along those paths to inform the public of our good work. Some of the pollinator species that we're going to be planting will include native milkweed, which will be for the monarch butterflies. The U.S. Forest Service also is going to assist us with staff, and I'll be getting some interns as well, and we'll be able to collect pollinator species seeds, and then we'll be able to sprout them in our greenhouse and spread them along the right-of-way. So that's all I have for you this year.
Great. Thank you, Joy, for sharing, and thank you all our PC representatives for sharing this really important context. So with that, we can go on to the next slide, please. Perfect. Thank you. So on this slide, we're showing the Tier 1 herbicide used by the Department of Public Works. So the amount of Tier 1 herbicides applied by Public Works in recent year has been very low, and they stopped using Tier 1 herbicides in 2022. And the Department of Public Works did not submit any pesticide use exemptions in 2023, and they've put in a lot of hard work into reducing their Tier 1 herbicide use over the years to achieve this very low application levels. And with that, I'll turn it over to Al Hom now, who's representing Department of Public Works to speak. So Al, whenever you are ready.
Oh. Okay, thank you, Gabriel. As mentioned, my name is Al Hom. I'm the acting senior IPM specialist for Public Works. I'd like to briefly cover four issues that we are dealing with in the past year. First one is our weed management on street medians. Second is insect issues. Third is rodent. And lastly, what we're looking forward to in the future. In terms of weed management, we are responsible for all the landscape and hardscape street median that you have find throughout San Francisco. We're targeting 75% or better weed-free on these medians on such major thoroughfares such as Alameda, Embarcadero, Cesar Chavez, Market, and Sunset Boulevard. Both Alameda and Sunset Boulevard present the most challenge because they both have long medians as well as stretching miles long. And the issue that we have with them or these two streets or two sites are that they have a lot of bare soil, which in addition to the rain will easily have lots of weed on them. And each median has this sort of like its own biome with its own weed species and soil composition, as well as on Alameda, it's very windy and therefore there's a lot of garbage and litter on the median, which makes it difficult for application. As Gabriel mentioned, we did not seek any exemption. We rely mainly on Lifeline, which is a contact herbicide, so it does not have any systemic activity that the plant cannot absorb it. We are quite pleased with the performance of this product, however, it does require repeat application to get the type of control that we want. Now I want to move on to insect problems. Basically, we have two type of insect problem, ants and yellow jacket. With regard to ants, it's mostly an in-house problem here at our operations yard. Our operation yard is located at the southeast corner of the city. It's an 11-acre site with a lot of old buildings and lots of openings, cracks, and crevices. And we operate 24/7, 365, and we have multiple shifts. So therefore, it's quite a challenge to try to control the ants. We rely mainly on taro and also gel baits. With regard to yellow jackets, we have seen an increase in number of yellow jacket calls from the public as well as on our landscape sites. Most challenging has been that we've been finding yellow jacket nests on streets or in street sidewalks. These are small openings, and we've used mainly wasp sprays. However, it's very difficult to inject the wasp sprays into these cracks because the yellow jacket nests might be further deeper into the cracks, and so the chemical might not be able to reach these sites. So again, we have to do multiple treatment to try to get the control. In terms of rodents, we mainly deal with Norway rats and house mice. We have mice found here at our operation jar, mainly in offices and cubicles. That's because oftentimes we don't do an adequate sanitation and housekeeping. So there's a lot of spill dishes, dirty dishes left in the sink. And so these are attracted to the mice. In terms of Norway rat, we have in-house as well as service requests. We found that we have best luck in trapping Norway rats using snap traps as well With bait station, we use peanut butter or candy as bait. We have had good luck trapping lots of rodents in enclosed space such as homeless shelters. However, when we try to trap rodents on street tree basins or restaurant sites, we find that it's more percent more challenging because the rodents can have other food sources and hiding places, and they might not come to the trap as readily as we hope. Lastly, in terms of looking forward, for the last several years, I've been working by myself. However, right now we are full staff. I have two additional IPM specialists working with me. And also, we also have a night meeting crew that have came aboard since last April. This crew goes out at night, and they have had an impact on our work because they helped clean up the median during the wheat whipping and collecting the litter. So that makes our job easier, and I think that will ultimately result in a reduced number of applications. And lastly, I just want to highlight that we have neighborhood beautification days where we engage the community to come out to help weeding and to plant trees. And this gives the people in the community an idea of what pests are and the type of challenges and the labor that are involved in weeding and controlling pests. So I think we're focusing on also doing more work at underserved neighborhoods. So I think we're excited, looking forward, and I think that we will continue to reduce our pesticide usage. With that, that's it.
Great, thank you so much, all. We can go on to the next slide, and I'll hand it over to Shoba.
Thanks, Gabriel, and also say thanks to all the departmental representatives who have shared your IPM work thus far. So here on this slide, we're showing a tier one herbicide use from the Recreation and Parks Department, specifically for natural areas and parks and facilities. This does not include golf courses. Parks and facilities are reflected in the solid purple line, and natural areas are reflected in the pink dotted line. You can see that there's been overall a decrease in tier one herbicide use by the Rec and Parks Department since 2010. The graph does show an increase in tier one herbicide use in 2023. In these last couple days, we've had some discussions in which we've learned that we need to take a closer look at how the Rec and Parks data entries are being visualized by our software. Note that this won't change the total amount of the tier one herbicide applied, but it may change the location category in which the data shows up. Next slide, please. The Rec and Parks Department submitted 3 pesticide use exemptions in 2023, and I'll ask Matt through it, the Department of Recreation and Parks to take it from here. And Matt, just so you know, the exemptions are on this slide and the image that the photo is on the next slide, so it can advance to that whenever you prompt Deidre.
Hi, you can actually advance to the next slide. We can come back to the exemptions if you don't mind. Brilliant. So I'm Matt Pruitt, I'm the IPM coordinator for Rec and Parks Department. We have over 220 parks and open space and squares over throughout the city. We have a spot in Camp Mather, which is in Tuolumne County, and a golf course in San Mateo. So we have a diverse pest palette that we work with and try to manage. I'm gonna cover the tier one products first. And I'm going to jump right in. The tier one herbicide, which we saw in the slides earlier, the use has been only in our natural resource areas for biodiversity protections. It is a systemic herbicide, and that's it's also used in these areas. Within these areas, they're priority areas of the highest sensitivity, such as like grasslands. These are the most endangered habitats. And these areas, examples of these areas would be like Twin Peaks, Bayview Hill, Glen Canyon, Laguna Honda. These all have these sensitive areas that we're focused on dealing with weeds, where we need something systemic, something that's not going to stick around. It's going to have a short half-life, and it's going to be immobile in the soil. Some of these tier two systemic herbicides can stick around a little longer and be absorbed through the roots, and we could cause collateral damage to the adjacent vegetation, which we want to avoid. Another tier one product is ContraPest. That's a rat fertility control used to limit the populations where there's population spikes, such as Portsmouth Square, Joe DiMaggio, and the Beach Chalet, where there's just pressures, constant pressures, and we can manage these pests through prevention as best we can through sanitation measures, and then trapping them out. But a lot of times they'll have spikes, so this is where this rat fertility is used. Moving on, we have three different tier one fungicides that are used for turf grass. These fungicides are for high quality turf grass, such as golf course. So Harding Park, Fleming golf course over there. We used Heritage and Tourney and for managing fungus on the greens. These funguses can actually render the playing surface unplayable and cause a lot of damage. And then also we used Trinity, which is used on Golden Gate Golf Course. On the new golf course, we had a few different funguses that were breaking out on those new greens. So we had to manage that once this last year. And moving on, the next set of tier one pesticides are actually for insecticides, the PT Wasp Freeze and Suspend Polyzone. These are used for stinging insects such as yellow jackets. Yellow jackets are one of our main pests that we deal with throughout our park system. Too many to name. It's only where there's a public safety concern near trail sides, or if it's worker safety, if there's a gardener working in an area, make sure they're protected. We're not looking for these yellow jacket nests. We're just trying to prevent injury. And then, of course, Camp Mather has stinging insects as well. So we use those products up there as well. The PT Wasp Freeze is more of a knockdown, and the Suspend Polyzone, we can formulate into a foam. We can get into these cracks, crevices where PT Wasp Freeze cannot get into. The Nibor D is a product it's also insecticide, and that is couple different ways. We used it last year. It was for wood destroying organisms, like the powder post beetle. We had it at the Japanese tea garden pagoda that they had rebuilt. Our department actually built it back up to standard. And then also used for treating stinging insects and wall voids. So such as like Camp Mather and some of the cabins and the walls. And then we also use it at Kimball Park, where we had a yellow jacket nest. Okay, so another insecticide is MaxForce Complete. It's a granular insecticide is very rarely used, but it does does need to be used. We need to use it once this past year. Hold on, just a second. Lights went out there. Sorry about that. So we use that once on earwigs and an irrigation control box in Golden Gate Park, because they will mess up the controls of the irrigation, and we don't want to have heads firing water intermittently or having breakdowns. So that's where we use that, as well as sanitation measures. And the last tier one pesticide is insecticide is Taro Ant Killer. That's for ants. We use it in rotation with other tier two products, tier three products, as well as sanitation measures and preventative measures mentioned before by other departments. And that was at Harvey Milk and McLaren Lodge, where we had ant issues where we need to use that product. Okay, we can go back to the slide, the exemption slide, and I'll talk about that. If you don't mind. Okay, great. Yeah, there it is. Okay, so the first one there is a Celeprin. That was for white grub control at Harding Park Golf Course. Now, white grubs cause root damage and problems for the turf health. They eat the roots, they dwell in the soil. And another major issue, which is actually a worse issue, is a secondary pest that develops from that. These white grubs are high protein source, and we had ravens that were foraging them. And when they're foraging them out of the putting green, they're basically shredding the putting green. And maintenance staff would, we would try different things. We would repair these spots, resod these spots, and the ravens would continue to just re-rip and re-damage these greens, so become unplayable. Try to haze these birds, deterrence set up, such as mylar flagging and other hazing techniques. But those proved to be not so effective. And then, so we had to find something that would actually control the grubs. And this product, Celeprin, is actually, ends up being a tier three product that worked really well. And when we got rid of the grubs, the ravens were not interested in the greens anymore. Going forward, we continue to use cultural practices to prevent the white grubs, such as irrigation control, keeping the greens as dry as possible on the top, of sanding the greens with top dressing, then also dethatching the greens. Keeping an eye on development of new infestations as well. Okay, so the next one was phosphite. And that was that. So we had a downy mildew problem at the Golden Gate Park Rose Garden. And that downy mildew caused some severe damage to the roses over 3 seasons in a row. And it kind of kept ramping up. And basically the blooms that people come out to look at didn't bloom a lot of times. The buds would not open. They would just wither and die. We did other techniques, such as try to keep this, the overhead watering to minimum. We did tissue samples as well as soil samples to try to get the fertility correct. Removed debris and sanitized the area with, making sure that we didn't have any, survival bodies of the fungus or the mildew. And we end up having to, we have a product that's already on the list. It's called Phosphite. It's just the limitations weren't, it was just for the golf course, and we wanted to expand the limitations. So it was a trial use exemption, which it did work well in the Rose Garden. We ended up using it last year, and it did make it a lot better. It did improve the blooming, and this year's a lot better. as well. And then the last exemption was for Quinclorac, which is another product that's on our list. It's limited to the golf course of Harding Park in Fleming, and it's a selective herbicide, so it only takes care of certain types of weeds. It only is effective on certain types of weeds and plants, and it's also systemic. So we had an issue with cucuya grass at Lincoln Golf Course, another golf course that it's basically made up of a lot of cucuya grass. The main grass on the course is cucuya grass, but the putting greens are made of bent grass, and the cucuya grass is not playable. Like, you can't make a putting green out of cucuya grass, and therefore renders the greens useless. So it was encroaching on these greens. It was coming from all directions. So hand removal was used, but it was just not feasible at this point. It had already taken over these runners, growing towards the green, or popping up into the green. And so we just thought that it may be a defensible area. We want to create a defensible area about 10 to 15 feet around surrounding the greens. So we don't want to get rid of all the cucuya grass, because that would prove to be too, that would also be in non-feasible, unless the whole course is renovated. So we want a defensible area where we can continue to hand remove, and then also oversee with the grass type that we want there. So we put an exemption to use this quinclorac on the cucuya grass for just the green surround. So just we targeted that area and use it in that location. And that's all the exemptions that we had for last year. And I'll turn it back over to Shoba. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Matt. We can move on to slide 20. Great. Thank you. So here, what you're seeing is what San Francisco International Airport's use of Tier 1 herbicides has looked like since 2010. You can see there's been an overall reduction in Tier 1 herbicide use at the airport, particularly over the last few years, with a slight uptick in 2022. SFO did not report any use of Tier 1 herbicides in 2023. And I'll note that the airport runways are subject to FAA regulations, meaning that they cannot have weeds in those areas. So the airport does use some herbicides in some areas to comply with those FAA regulations. Next slide, please. The airport submitted 5 pesticide exemptions in 2023, which you can see on the slide. So I'll turn it over to Jeremy Harris, representing SFO, to take it from here.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jeremy. Thank you for having me today. I'm honored to speak on behalf of the IPM team and give a brief explanation about our sustainable practices at the San Francisco International Airport. Our team at SFO is committed to the integrated pest management approach, prioritizing pest prevention by focusing on sanitation and establishing relationships with our tenants and the employees to fortify teamwork and provide education on best practices. By considering environmental factors that contribute to pest infestations, the IPM team can focus on long-term prevention of pests and by managing their ecosystems. This technique reduces the amount of pesticides used on airport property and surrounding communities, creating a healthier environment for the public and the wildlife around the airport. There are a few pesticides from the approved list that are used by our staff in limited quantity when the pest threshold is reached and we're unable to maintain controllable levels with cultural, mechanical, or biological methods, as well as when worker safety is concerned. So some of the Tier 1 pesticides used were the Top Gun all-weather rodenticide bait blocks, Taro ant baits, and PT wasp freeze. The Top Gun bait blocks are used in secure tamper-proof boxes in order to exclude non-target pests, and they're necessary in order to manage the rodent populations. The ant baits are only used after proper sanitation practices are addressed, and the wasp freeze is used in areas where stinging insects are a threat to the public. We're making an effort to reduce the amount of tier one pesticides, as you can see on the graph, and we're replacing them with lower risk products whenever possible. These exemptions that we've applied for, some Max Force products, these are products that we have in back stock, and they've been since removed from the approved list. They're used to treat cockroaches and ants and are rotated with other products in order to reduce pesticide resistance. Another exemption was for Safari SG insecticide. This was used to treat mealybug on select high-value interior plants. And we've all but eliminated pesticide usage in the landscaped areas at SFO. The gardeners are conscious in their landscape maintenance routines, and they regularly consult with the IPM team. They use regenerative techniques, including sheet mulching, steaming, flaming, and water conservation practices in order to keep the weeds at a manageable level. And I'd like to close with a big thanks to Shoba and Gabriel and everyone at the San Francisco Environment for all their great work, and express how proud I am of the work that we do at SFO in order to provide a diverse, equitable, and safe environment in service to our community. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jeremy. Okay, I'll pass it over to Gabriel for the next one.
Thank you, Shoba. Thank you, Jeremy. And Deidre, if we can actually stop sharing the slides for our next speaker. So next, we'll hear an update from the Treasure Island Development Authority, or TIDA. So TIDA did not submit any pesticide use exemptions in 2023. And with that, I'll hand it over to Peter Somerville. So Peter, whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, everyone. Peter Somerville from the Treasure Island Development Authority. Happy to be here to share our information with you. TIDA, compared to some of the other agencies, has a relatively small footprint for pesticide application. Our application is all performed by our master landscape contractor, Rubicon Landscaping. And our applications are really focused on three critical invasive species, primarily found in our natural areas. And those are Bermuda grass, eucalyptus resprouts, and acacia resprouts. For the Bermuda grass, we utilize Roundup. Really, it's an issue of needing to get things down to the roots and an issue of just the person power involved in hand removal of Bermuda grass is ridiculously inefficient. The acacia and eucalyptus resprouts are primarily a result of legacy tree work that was not done correctly and requires returning for cut and paint purposes on specific identified resprouts. As you'll see from the data, we have reduced our use overall between 2023 and 2022. Primarily a main area where we had have been focusing on Bermuda grass aggressively for the last couple years has taken hold, and we've been able to reduce our Roundup use there. Additionally, we have gone away from Garlon altogether, which accounts for the decrease in Garlon, but also the increase in Vastland, as we are using that for the stump painting. We also seek with eucalyptus and acacia resprouts to do cut and peels whenever possible. And like I said, the applications across the board are not on public right-of-ways, are not in public parks. They're limited to the Yerba Buena Island natural areas. And since we have taken acceptance of the East and West stormwater gardens on Yerba Buena Island, we have had to do some Roundup application there to get a foothold on some Bermuda grass that was starting to come up. So alternatives to herbicide application, we do a lot of steaming, we do a lot of flame treating, and we just have a lot of hand labor and a lot of hand pulling in that regard. So we are happy that our use has decreased Over the past year, we're seeking as much as we can to continue to decrease. We do sometimes hit, you know, a bit of a critical wall where we just need to apply for the protection of the habitat, and just because there is not a more viable option. And like I said earlier, that's primarily with the Bermuda grass. With that, that would end our presentation. Would like to echo the previous speaker and thank Shoba and Gabriel for all their work and support and knowledge over the years. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, for that. And then Deirdre, if we can get the slides back up, and we'll be on slide 22, and then I'll hand it over to Shoba to take over.
Great. Thank you, everyone. So great. Next, we'll hear from Luis Agurto with PestTech, the citywide pest contractor. PestTech submitted 11 pesticide use exemptions in 2023. And just a note that we did truncate the exemption information on the slide to get everything to fit in one slide. So I'll remind folks that there is a summary of pesticide use exemptions document available on the webpage for this hearing that has all the complete information. You can zoom in on that and get all the info there. So I'll turn it over to Luis Agurto with PestTech.
Thanks, Shoba. Hi, everyone. My name is Luis, as Shoba said, and I'm the CEO of PestTech. We're a local San Francisco integrated pest management company. So I wanted just to start with some information, what we did in 2023. It feels like forever ago, so I had to go into my calendar to pull out some highlights, but I wanted to share with you some of our efforts to further the city's IPM goals and to share some data on non-chemical products and practices that we used in San Francisco in 2023. So we started last year with the successful completion of a pest prevention project in Chinatown, at the Central subway stations. We had the great opportunity to work with the SFMTA facilities teams to take what we've learned at their other sites and to implement it in the new buildings before the grand opening of the Central subway. It was a Herculean effort, but I'm proud of the work we did to prevent unsightly and costly damage to the facility and specifically the escalators in the future. In the spring, I presented to the Technical Advisory Committee on Sustainable Rodent Management to introduce the Department of Pesticide Regulations Sustainable Pest Management Roadmap for continuing the progress of IPM in California. We discussed the rodenticide restrictions that were coming in California and the wicked problem of studying urban rodent ecology and a framework for overcoming it. In the summer, I worked with SFE to improve an IPM training program for property managers and maintenance personnel in multi-unit housing. That's a project that we're delivering this year. And in the fall, we sent a team of 4 technicians to Southern California to the West Coast Rodent Academy to learn and contribute their expertise to the team assembled there. A couple of things I'm really excited to share about are how we closed out the year last year. Was with the deployment of remote rodent monitoring systems at 2 sites. One at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital, where we installed smart traps to improve our service efficiency by eliminating the need to check empty traps. And in coordination with the SF Reckon Park, we deployed rodent sensors in Chinatown's Portsmouth Square to visualize activity and engage with the park's neighbors. This project was a proof of concept for a grant application that we applied for and one this year named Eureka, which stands for the Effective Urban Rodent Ecology Knowledge Alliance. With the city and DPR support, we will be expanding this novel rodent monitoring system in San Francisco to demonstrate alternatives to rodenticides to professionals like us throughout California. Since the non-chemical data is not reported in this meeting, I thought I could share some high points. In 2023, we used over 1,500 linear feet of rodent exclusion fabric to exclude rodents from buildings. We installed 76 door sweeps. We used over 6,800 rodent traps. And I'm shocked to see this, but I did the math and I think it's correct. We deployed over 36,000 insect traps, a variety of insect traps, including fly traps, bed bug traps, and cockroach monitors. There are many more examples of non-chemical controls that we aren't doing a great job of tracking. So I could present that data to you, like the use of vacuums for cockroaches for cleanups, and how we facilitate change and clutter and organizational practices for rodent management indoors. We'll be looking at how we can track these better going forward. So although we do emphasize non-chemical practices, we did apply for some pesticide exemptions for a number of instances that I'll cover with you now. So the first one is at the Academy of Science for Doxum Precise. This is a microgranular ant bait. At the Academy, we have a chronic infestation of ants on the living roof. And so we needed to experiment with another active ingredient, a different bait formulation to see if that would help us. It did help quite a bit. There's some alternatives to this product that we also like that we'll be asking to add to the list going forward. We also experimented with the use of a product called Termidor Foam. This is an insecticide that was applied into cracks and crevices and void spaces, having to do with the same problem with the living roof. And I don't think that we will ask to use this product again, since we did find an alternative that worked for us. We also, in preparation for some of the rodenticide restrictions that were coming and the loss of diphazanon rodenticides, we asked for this exemption for flatline. It's a soft bait. It's still approved for use in California. Is a first generation rodenticide multi-feed, and is useful to have in the toolbox for managing rodents in challenging areas. At Laguna Honda Hospital, we asked for the use of PT Alpine pressurized fly bait. This was for a very specific situation where we have memory care patients that create some fly problems by their hoarding of snacks and foods. That's very challenging to manage. Additionally, the state auditors don't like seeing fly traps or insect monitors. So we asked for this invisible fly bait to be applied in spaces to control those flies. For the next one is for Nibor D, insecticide foam and IGR. This is a ready to use product that is made up of some constituents that are already on the list. So it's a can of foam for treating drains. This is especially useful for jails where there's no access to electrical plugs where we can charge our foamers. So it's a very useful product. The next one is a Takedown 2 soft bait. This is in preparation again for the limited access to rodenticides and some of the tools that we lost this year, and also to rotate rodenticides so we can avoid the development of resistance to these active ingredients. It's used inside of the sewer system where we treat in some places by direction of DPH, and in cases where exclusion or sanitation in outdoor settings doesn't happen fast enough. Additionally, we asked for the use of Terrad blocks along with a product that we have a EPA exempt product to be used in conjunction with it. The idea is that we had Terrad blocks on the list previously. Its active ingredient is called calciferol, which is very low risk in terms of secondary poisoning. We removed it from the list because rodents really wouldn't take the bait. And so we developed a pest attractant that you can apply to the outside of the bait to see if you could get the rodents to eat it. We did have to get that approved by an EPA ombudsman. We got the approval, we tested it out, and it didn't really seem to work for us. We would like to test this again in the future, but when it comes to that point, we will apply for an exemption. We also had a problem with fleas at a fire department. This was a problem with raccoons from a neighbor's yard that were bringing them to the building and getting picked up by persons coming into the building. So we asked for an emergency exemption to apply a product that has both a knockdown and an insect growth regulator. I think this product was previously on the reduced risk pesticide list as well. Next one was for SFMTA for the use of a cockroach gel bait. This is a gel bait with a different active ingredient, which is good for rotation. And we had it in stock and asked to use it for this instance, and we'll ask to add this product to the reduced risk pesticide list going forward. And then the last product is a product called Suspend that's on the list for very limited use for stinging pests. This product is on our Green Shield approved list, and it's on an approved list in Contra Costa County. So this was applied for an SFPUC location in Tracy. And so far out there, we have a different branch that takes care of this. They have a chronic issue with these occasional invaders, open doors, and they wanted to test this as a barrier to keep crickets from coming into this building. I don't think that the results were satisfactory, so we will not ask for this exemption again, and not ask that any use limitations be changed on the reduced risk pesticide list. So that covers it for me. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Luis. And you can go to the next slide, Deidre. Thank you to all the city department representatives and to Luis for explaining your IPM work, your use of the most restricted pesticides, and any exemptions that you may have submitted in 2023. I've learned a lot during this session, and I keep learning from all of you. I appreciate that. So I appreciate your efforts and dedication to integrated pest management. We have Gabriel and my names and our email address here, env-ipm@sfgov.org. Any comments or questions from folks, if you send them to that email address, they will reach both Gabriel and me. And I'm ready to turn it back over to Deidre.
Thank you, Shubha. Give me a moment while I pull up the comment. Members of the public who wish to make a public comment on this item should now press *3 to be added to the queue. But those already on hold in the queue, please continue to wait until it is your turn to speak. And we'll pause for a minute to give participants time to join the speaker queue. Seeing there are no callers in the queue, public comment on this item is closed. With that, we can proceed to item 4. General public comment. Members of the public may speak on matters that are relevant to pest management on city property or properties leased from the city but are not on today's agenda. Members of the public who wish to make a public comment on this item should now press *3 to be added to the queue. For those already on hold in the queue, please continue to wait until it is your turn to speak. I will pause for a minute to give participants time to join the speaker queue. There are no callers in the queue. Public comment on this item is closed. Shubha, is there anything you'd like to add?
I'll just express my thanks once again for all the city department staff and to Louise for sharing your work today. And I am glad we have these hearings each year. It gives us an opportunity to do a careful look through what pesticides have been applied in the previous year and learn some more about the pest issues affecting city properties.
With that, we can proceed to item 5, adjournment. The hearing is adjourned. The time is 1:40 p.m. Thank you for joining us.